So I don't have a cocktail yet.
And the only thing in my reach is a leftover thing of Manischewitz pistachio orange macaroons. So
I'll allow it. I'm Jessica.
And I'm Yonit.
Welcome to the Kiddushka Book Club. L'chaim.
L'chaim.
So today is a very special episode.
Is it though?
Well, no, none of them are really that special.
I was going to say everyone is special.
Oh, sorry. You see, you went the optimist way and I went the fatalist way, which is meh. I mean,
on brand though, on brand.
It is on brand. It's on brand for you and on brand for me. I think that, well, first of all, let's just talk about something else really fast, because before we get into why it's special, as you say, is you are a self-proclaimed extrovert.
Yes.
Definitely. And I'm a self-proclaimed introvert.
Yes.
And there are people out there who are neither, meaning they're not an extreme of either. They're just people. And that's fine. But there, people need to understand extrovert, introvert doesn't mean I like to stay home. I like to go out.
Right. I like to be alone sometimes when I want to be alone. Mm-hmm. But that's not necessarily how I get energy. And if it's too long, it's like I can eat vegetarian food, but if I do that an extended period of time, then I might like kill something with my bare hands and eat it.
You might feel like, tiger rage. Correct. Exactly. So extroverts are people who get more energy from being near people, as in you walk into a party and you're like, okay, I'm not so sure what's going on here, blah, blah, blah. But then you start talking to people and you're like, I'm alive. And it, you know, and
at the end of the night, I might be tired, but I feel like that was amazing and I'm buzzing.
Right. And I might walk into the party the same way you walked in, going, all right, I'll figure this out. Talk to a few people. And then without any warning, my brain will go, you're done. You're done. You're done. Get out. Get out fast. Find a way to leave. Shut it down. You are being sapped. And all I've done is like walk over to the bar and get one shot. Like I haven't even engaged with anybody. And my brain is panicking and going, I can't, this isn't working out for me today because I didn't recharge yet. And the way an introvert recharges is by being alone.
Yeah, I can see that. So wait. So how about a one of those chambers where they the deprivation chambers where there's no sound and you're in like you're floating in water and in the dark in an egg?
No. Really? No. I don't mind if I'm like alone, like floating in a jacuzzi or you know what I mean? Like that's different because there's something to look at. And there's a view nearby and maybe I've got music going. I need to be stimulated, just not by people.
Because I cannot be alone with my own thoughts. It's not a nice place to be, I'll just say.
Well, I definitely think that's one of the issues of being stuck at home is a lot of people are like, my brain, my thoughts are now my only reality and I'm believing all of them.
Yeah. Right? I've turned completely to romance novels and trash television, which I normally have a much more varied diet. I'm forcing myself to do crossword puzzles every day so that I don't turn complete to mush, but like I have definitely turned into a comfort food, comfort entertainment person during this time.
So I think that people think that comfort entertainment has to be like one category. And there's two for me. There's comfort entertainment is on the one hand, like you said, trash TV, Vanderpump Rules or Real Housewives of New York. Real Housewives of New York is the ultimate comfort entertainment because it's as if what's going on outside isn't real. And this reality show I'm watching is the only thing that's real. And it's happening. And then I turn it off at the end and go, oh, shoot, we're still in lockdown. Like I forget. It makes me forget. It's escapist because it's so ridiculous. And that's why I love it. But then there's something, and this is actually what makes this episode special. Certain shows, the escapism of it is that they're so brilliantly and tightly written. Right? Mm-hmm. Like Schitt's Creek. Have you seen Schitt's Creek, Yoni?
I watched one episode, but it hasn't become my comfort yet. Maybe I'll try again.
It's the comfort of it is, first of all, it's hilarious and the characters, you grow to love them, but the writing is so tight. It's so tightly edited that the show, it's not a half hour or hour long show. It ends when the episode ends, and the episode ends when it's, the arc is done for the episode, because they really edit out anything that's a waste. It's every single line is useful. Every single shot is useful. Every single raised eyebrow or a silly looking expression is useful. And I think this is something I've been trying to find. So when I found a TV show yesterday and binge watched it in one afternoon, the whole first season.
Nice.
It was Never Have I Ever on Netflix. Nope. Yes. Have you? It's Mindy Kaling created it.
No, but she is amazing. And I love almost everything she's done. So.
Oh, it's great. First of all, there are no white people.
Cool.
And I didn't even notice, as a Jewish person, that the only like white expressing person is a Jewish guy named Ben Gross. Okay. That's it. Every single other person is a person. But here's what's great about that show. You don't think about it because you're like, yeah, it can, because every single person is true to their culture and every single person talks about their race. But it's not, they're all fully formed characters. Nobody's a token friend.
Nice. I like that. That's cool.
So what it does is it says, we're not going to give any viewer the opportunity to say that people are stereotypes or that people are tokens. We're just going to like create all these characters. We're going to be honest about the things that apply to their lives, and we're going to make a great show. And it's about a group of teenage friends, these three girls who are just, you would love them. I would love them. These girls are in the tech club and the drama club, and one girl is in orchestra, and they have decided that they want to be cool. It's just not, it doesn't go very well.
Yeah, yes. I can see that.
You could see that. It's a great show.
I find that your escape and you, what you connect with, it's either, like you said, it's either so far from reality and not real. Mm-hmm. Where it is a comfortable reality, but like a comfortable reality, not a current reality, but like a comfortable reality place. So like being in high school and trying to be cool, or, you know, being a trashy Essex boy on a beach, you know.
Well, you know, I actually was looking through my notebook of book ideas that I'd written down when I was trying to give my agent a list of middle grade book ideas for the future. And I remember being on the phone with my sister Francine, and she goes, I have an idea for you. Write this down. I said, okay. She goes, it's Yonit, but she's in seventh grade, but she's exactly who she is now, but in seventh grade. And I'm like, that's genius. You think anyone will notice she has the personality of a woman in her 30s?
Maybe. I'm writing another, whatever. I started a new book, and I'm trying to figure out how many books I can write before people realize that I'm the main character every time.
Well, this is our topic for the first half of this episode, is we're talking about creativity and writing during a difficult time when people are having trouble putting pen to paper, or keyboard to screen. I don't know, what's the metaphor there? Putting pen to paper.
Finger to keyboard? That doesn't seem right.
Putting fingers to the keys.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
Okay, that would also help with that. So what have you been up to with yours? All of yours that feature you?
Right, so there's one that's my Hanukkah rom-com is a tech worker finding love at the office, which is not me because I've not found love at the office, but it's sprinkled with, she's got my personality, and it's sprinkled with anecdotes that have happened to me. My other one is a space heist. And the captain hates humans. Doesn't really hate humans. You'll find out. She doesn't actually hate humans. Spoiler. Doesn't really hate them. But like, she has no patience for people and her crew and like nonsense. And I'm like, you know, I'm putting my sarcasm in there, and you know, I say often that I hate people. It's a thing. So you know, okay, like if I was an alien who captained a spaceship who was trying to steal from, you know, a crime lord in order to like, you know, make back money so I could get out of debt, like that's my personality. That's what I would be like.
So it, you would never be the alien who's on that ship whose job it is to abduct humans and learn about them, because you'd be like, I hate people. I don't want to do
this. I don't even want to deal with you. I would be like, hey, go and do this for me. Don't die because that's inconvenient. And then come back and then go to your quarters and like, don't talk to me again.
I think you'd also have trouble understanding why the people that you assigned to this job, sorry, the aliens that you assigned to this job came back with super mixed data. Like, here you are, you abducted 15 people. That's a good control group. And every single one of them had completely different results. How is that possible?
Right. What process are you guys following? What are you guys doing? Get your act together. I want a bar chart on my desk by the end of the day. Go.
See, by the way, this, having conversation, I think is super important, because introvert, extrovert, I think it's important for people who are doing a solitary job, right? Like a job where they're not managing a team. Maybe you're a writer or whatever your job is. Maybe you are someone who's in sales. You're doing a solitary job, right? Interacting with other people in a really honest way where you just talk about stuff is a great way to boost your creativity and do your job better.
In tech, we have something called rubber ducking. So, you know, I can sit down and just be writing code all day and not talk to another person. But if I get stuck, sometimes I just need to say, hey, let me talk through this with you. And I'll, okay, so I tried this and I did that. And I'll be like, hold on, wait, I think I got it. And I'll go. And you'll be like, but I didn't say anything. And I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm like, it's fine. You helped me so much. Because just the idea of talking through the problem, I figure out either something I missed or I have a new idea. It's pretty common. And it's called rubber ducking because you might as well be a rubber ducky for how much you contributed to the conversation. And yet it was a helpful exercise.
I love that phrase. It's a little insulting, rubber ducking, to the person you're referring to. So there has to be like different levels of rubber ducking, like rubber ducking, real ducking, right? Like having a pet puppy. Like your puppy is contributing because your puppy's interacting with you. But correct. Your puppy's not the reason you came up with that good idea. The puppy is just there to kind of boost your emotions. But a rubber ducking works fine. What's that?
Rubber duckies are very cute, by the way.
They are very cute. I know that yesterday and today I signed up for webinars, right? Yesterday there was a Jewish kid lit webinar, and today I signed up for a imparting emotions in your characters webinar. Yesterday's webinar, every single person was on the screen. I mean, I had the option where I was only able to see the panelists, but other people had it where you could see everyone on the screen. Me knowing this, I was like, well, oh no. Like now I have to like look like a person the entire time. And me paying attention involves me taking a pen and paper and writing ideas while you're working. And it's not necessarily that I'm taking notes from the panelists. It's not like I'm panelists like, oh, here's my idea and I write it down. It's that because the panelists are being creative and because the panelists are talking about their craft, I get inspired about my creativity and my craft, and I start writing down my ideas. So while I'm listening to an hour-long panel on Jewish books and publishing, I plotted out the rest of my book.
Nice.
It was useful. And then today, while she was giving a 30-minute webinar on imparting emotion to your characters, 50% of the time I was writing down actual, like taking notes, because there were things I forget to do. And the other part of the time I was like, how do I apply this? So for anyone who's a writer out there who's listening, the advice was involving emotions in your book that you have to think about the theme of your book, the message of your book. Like, what is this book about, right? What is the, if someone had to say, yeah, what's the takeaway? Like, give me one theme takeaway from your book, right? Like just one, even if there's 10, just give me one of them. You should have that. And then everything you write needs to be there to serve that. Otherwise, cut it. We need all that work. We don't need to print all those pages. The other thing was your character, right? Define who your character is. What are their flaws? Why are they imperfect? Why are they awesome? What's their personal style? How do they dress? What's their inner thought process? How does their inner emotional life differ from what they show to everybody else? You have to ask yourself, like, people are people and they're not always honest, you know? And the third one was the plot. It's how to make sure that everything that's happening in the plot isn't there as a waste. Like it's all there to contribute to the emotional connection that your reader is going to take. Because otherwise, you've said it before, you'll DNR a book.
Oh, yes. I had to DNR one pretty hard this weekend.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to say the name, but just tell me why you DNR'd it, meaning you don't read it anymore.
If it hadn't have been Shabbos, I might have set it on fire. Oh, okay, fine. It's somebody's loaned library book, so I also wouldn't set it on fire. But at first I started reading it, and it's about a broken marriage. And it's a topic that hit close to home. The husband was, you know, there was no communication, like zero, not supportive, all that stuff. So first I set it down because I was like, I don't know if I'm ready to read this. It's a little, it's not escapist enough for me. I'll get back to it. Then I got back to it and I was like, okay. And then I'm reading it and God, the characters are a Latino, which I'm a Latina. And so I was like, all right. I flipped to see the author. The author doesn't seem to be Latina, but I'm not going to make judgments based on a name and a picture, but like did not seem to be in the same culture as the characters. And then I just thought like, the husband was so one-dimensional, so like over the top, so like I just didn't care about him or his relationship or like anything he was doing. I just was done. I was like, all right, we're done here, because like I just couldn't do it anymore. So I'm an empath, so I have a hard time watching someone be embarrassed. We've talked about before, I can't watch the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, because like it's all about her kind of being silly in front of other people because she doesn't know things. And so
you can't watch a Ben Stiller movie. Ben Stiller movies aren't for you.
No, because he's an idiot, and so I don't feel bad for him. Like I have to feel empathy for the person, so I don't feel
okay. I get that.
But Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt hurt me a lot. Oh my God, Jane the Virgin hurt me. Like there's so many things where they're vulnerable and they're embarrassed, and so I can't. So I feel for the characters a lot. And in this case, I did not feel at all. And I didn't want to read anymore because I was like, I don't care what happens to you.
We've talked about this before. I have mentioned by name before. I like Sarah J. Maas. I think her books are good, but there are so many characters and everybody has their favorite. And what happens is you find out that your favorite isn't going to be in the next book in the series, barely at all. And you're like, well, if I only care about the witch and I don't care about the other 9 leads whose perspectives we're all gonna see, and I find out that the next book doesn't even have the witch in it, I'm like, well, do I need to keep going?
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I stopped reading it, even though I liked it.
So I was watching a K-drama with some friends, and hilariously, one of the friends would fast forward through. She's like, I don't like that character. So I fast forward whenever she's talking. And so we're watching it and we're like, dude, it was like a super depressing side story. It didn't really add a lot to the main plot. And we're like, this is so depressing. She's like, I don't know. I just didn't like her. So I just fast forward. Like, well, you missed this entire depressing side story. And so now we also want to fast forward through it. So, you know,
But you DNR, because you DNR'd this other one because it was too tough for you emotionally.
For the first time, I tried again. Mm-hmm. I tried again. And then, it's changed perspective. It was from the wife, and then it changed perspective to be from the husband. Mm. And the wife I found was better written in some ways. And then I did find out that it's not the first book in the series. So it's potential that like some of their backstory had been set up in the previous book. And this was a book focused on them, whereas the other book was on their friend. Okay. So there was like, you know, so this, the chapter about the wife, fine. The chapter about the husband, I was just like, ugh, like he doesn't even talk in complete sentences. Like it just was not, a good character, was not a good fleshed out human being, you know? And I read another book with the same setup, you know, broken marriage, husband and wife, da da, and they both felt like real people. They both felt, you know, like empathetic, like deserving of empathy people. So I followed through, even though they did do dumb things. Like, I'm not saying that I have to like them. You know, I have characters that I love that I hate them. That's cool too. But it's different than like, eh.
Well, I think that people can get the misconception when they hear people talking about books as much as we talk about books, right? So because we read so many books, we're comfortable putting one down and saying, this isn't for me. And I don't want people to get the wrong idea that the reason I might put down a book is because I go, oh, there's not enough, you know, diversity in this book, or there's not enough, you know, love triangles in this book, or, you know what I mean? Like, we're not arbitrarily putting things down. We're not saying that there's this list of criteria. What the class that I took today was about emotional connection. Whatever happens in this book, it could be a book about, that's the most generic thing ever, right? It could be a YA dystopian where there's a love triangle and she's super klutzy, doesn't know she's hot, and has a mad skills for a girl that's been living for all these years, right? Like, that could be the book. And we're smiling because we're like, we love it. That's what we do. Because there's
Sometimes.
When I care. So that's the thing. It's literally, you can put out 10 books that all have almost identical premises, but I'll read them all. They're good. Good if I connect to each character.
You know, interestingly enough, so I read Divergent and then I saw the movie. And, you know, the thing about the movie is they're crunching a bunch of content into a short time. So in the book, she takes time to, you know, describe some of the side characters. And so, you know, in the opening scene, so it's not really a spoiler, but some people die, you know, pretty early in the book, people die and you care in the book because she's taken time to describe who they are. And in the movie, you're just like, oh, that person who I don't know who that is, they just died. Like, you can't feel connected to them. You
don't almost like they threw that into the movie for the reader so that the reader would see their characters they recognize die, but they didn't have enough time to make us care.
Right, exactly. But the author had taken time. She had taken time to give, even this person was only on for maybe at one page, but felt like, oh my God, they just died. You know, like,
Right. It's about the emotional connection. So I know that on Outlander, Diana Gabaldon wrote all these amazing Outlander books. They're too much for me. Like, when I saw the show, I realized I preferred this particular story in that particular medium. So I made a choice between the two. And maybe one day, years from now, I'll say, okay, the show's long gone. Now I can, and I've forgotten what happens. Now I can read the books again because I've already seen the show. But the show is different. And even Diana Gabaldon will tweet about it. She's like, this isn't in the book and it's not my choice, but it's what they decided. And sometimes she approves and sometimes she doesn't, but they commit to the character developments.
Yeah.
Even if they change the way it happens, they commit to making us care about the redemption of certain characters and certain characters getting their revenge and certain characters living or dying at a certain time. That's important. What's less important is the exact plot points, if you can make me care.
Right. Yeah. I read a series of books where each book is about a different family member in this extended family that has witches, vampires, and werewolves in it. And, you know, the society where they're kind of at war. And so I say family, but it's, you know, whatever. And each book is one person finding their soulmate. And there's one character who's super like the antagonist in the book because he's coming after his three sisters who have run away to try and get out from under the oppressive family thumb. And they find their soulmates. And one of them, I think, is human or something. And he is not empathetic to them. He is hard on them. He is just really like a rough character, like really drives some of the conflicts. And then one of the books is him finding his soulmate. And you're like, ha, 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 sucker. Now you know how it feels. And it was funny because I was like, I hate this guy. He was so bad in this other book. Like he was the bad guy in that book. But now in this one, he is the protagonist. And, you know, I thought that was interesting that you made me like seeing him, even if I was not rooting for him. And then now I'm rooting for him. And, you know, like playing with my emotions like that was really cool. So, you know, it's not even just about like, I like the character. Again, like I have to want to hate you also. Like you have to make me want to care enough that I continue to hate that character.
Right. Yes, exactly. It's kind of an Outlander, the Stephen Bonnet character. God, we hate him. We hate him so much. He is just inhuman and awful, but we really love it when he's on the screen because you know that part of the story is going to get really interesting in some terrible or fascinating way, right? Like, because he's written in such a way, he's portrayed in such a way where we're like, well, he's a horrible person, but he sure is clever, right? Like, we don't root for him, but we root for getting to see him, and then we root for seeing him, you know, ended. We're like, make that guy die. All I want is to see him so I can see him get killed, but I don't want to see him get killed off screen, right? I want to see it because I'm curious about this character. See, if that's the thing is you can, if the character, if you don't care if they're there when you're writing, if there's a character that doesn't matter, right? Just cut them. You don't have to have a person be there just so you can prove that your main character has more than one friend.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I think especially, you know, when we talked about this, especially if you're using that character to be like a placeholder for diversity, just mm-hmm. don't.
Just don't. If the character is a placeholder for diversity, if they're a token friend, then don't have them there. And if they're a friend just because you're like, God, it's weird that my character only has one friend. I should really give her another one. Well, make sure it matters. Even if what matters is that you're ignoring her, right? Your main character is deliberately ignoring this person, whatever it is, even if your main character is just projecting on her, that it should matter that something is on the page. It should matter that you bothered to write this down. You did another draft, and then you did another draft, and then you did a revision, and then an editor went through it. And guess what? You still kept that line. And if you still kept that line, I want to know why it's there.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's the more characters you have, the harder it is to keep that momentum going. Mm-hmm. One time I read this book. It was the one time there was like such a wide variety of characters. And the premise was that all like 7 or 8 of them could, there's a prophecy about someone who's going to save the world. Mm-hmm. And all 8 of them potentially could fulfill this prophecy. So now they're like, okay, well, we better make sure all 8 of us get to this mountain where this something, something last battle is going to happen. So every single one of them needs to get there. So, but they're all very different from each other. Like one's a warrior and a couple of them are sorcerers and a couple of them are, you know, one is a storyteller and a couple are, you know, like herbalists or whatever. So like each one has their strengths and they have to figure out how to get. So they're like, okay, well, I'm going to have to carry you through this because you're definitely not going to be able to like jump from stalactite to stalactite to get through this lava something, something or whatever nonsense it was, you know, so they have to work together. And so you appreciate every single character's strength and weakness and you get to see them shine in different ways. And
then you know the name of this book? This sounds really good.
I'll have to look it up. And then there's one scene where like one of them may not make it and you're like, but all of you have to make it. And yeah, you're like, the stakes are high because you bought into it and you know that all 8 of them, and like 8 is a lot. 8 main characters is a lot of main characters.
Yeah. It's a lot to make me buy into all of them. And I think that that's important that we have the emotional buy-in. And that's what makes a person, you know, DNR, do not read a book. Like I'm DNR stands for do not read, right?
Yes.
Okay. You put it away. You know what? I admit 2 chapters in, 5 chapters in, other people gave it 5 stars. Wasn't for me. Right? Okay, I put it down. And you don't have to make an excuse. You did not make an emotional connection. But that doesn't mean that other people didn't. There was I reviewed a book recently like that where I gave it 3 stars, but I was very specific about why. I said, I didn't make an emotional connection because. And mm-hmm. I said, this is the reason I didn't. I always felt like the main character in this book was always going to be fine. I figured it out. This character is going to be fine. She's not going to get harmed. She's going to return home and she's going to be healthy and everything's going to go back to normal. And I just, because there were, the stakes were never high enough for making me to feel like she was ever, you know, on her journey going to fail. Like she was never going to fail. She didn't have enough agency for me. She was never going to lose out. So because of that, I didn't feel the emotional connection. But somebody else who doesn't want that level of stress when they're reading, they don't want the anxiety of that. They're the person who turns to the last page to make sure the character's still alive.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah. You know, it's different things, different hooks for different people. And that's fine mm-hmm. too. Although I occasionally do DNR something because of like a flagrant issue, an ism, you know, or, you know, some kind of racism, some kind of sexism, some kind of whatever. And so then I might be like, so I don't think that other people should read this book because I think that, you know, it's a strong enough reason not to enjoy this one. But otherwise, yeah, it's just, you know, I didn't like it. And it's funny because I have a slightly different scale where 3 is actually a pretty solid read. It's if I give you 2 stars or less, then it was like, no, don't look at. So if you look at books I've 3 starred, those are still very solid reads that I would recommend to people. Once it's 2 stars, I'm not going to recommend it to you. I'm not going to tell people to read it. I'm not going to tell people it exists. You're dead to me. 2 stars and less, you're dead.
But Hamlet made the cut.
I mean, it's Hamlet. Listen, you know, come on.
I'm trying, like, you're never going to tell us what your 2-star books are.
No, but you can go to my Goodreads and find them out. Come on.
Tell us what your Goodreads is again. Let's tell them real fast.
I'm Yonit DM everywhere.
Unique DM on Goodreads, and you can go there and you could find Unique's list of 2-star books, and you could consider those books that if she had a choice, she would DNR looking back.
You know, it's funny because I'm looking at some of the ones that I 2-starred, and I'm not going to name names, but some of them are very popular reads. So it's not that I'm very comfortable DNRing it, but I just got to the end and I was just like, oh, okay. You know, that happened. You know.
Well, so you gave me a book recently that nothing happens in it, but I'm loving every second. You gave me Heartstrings and Other Breakable Things. And you recommended it on the last episode, and now I have it. And, or was it a few episodes ago? Yeah. And now I have it. And what's interesting about it is really nothing happens.
Not really. And then it's funny because our friend of mine read it on my recommendation also, and she didn't really like it. So it's not for everybody, but I just thought it was.
This is a good example. Right? This is a book where I don't really feel that bad for the main character. It's a girl who's figuring out, like, she's kind of a little unwanted by her aunt's family. She's a little bit of a Cinderella. You know, her aunt took her in. Her aunt's a bit of a bitch, and she's really a foster girl, but they never really explain why this girl's, when her mom died, why she was being fostered anyway. Like, why didn't the government just say, this is your niece, you have to take her? Like, whatever. We're just supposed to believe the premise that a girl with a living aunt and uncle who could afford to take her was in foster care for 3 years of her teenage years. But okay. So she shows up at this place and she's got these like super bitchy cousins who she also kind of likes. And she's got, you know, a hot neighbor and a hot guy that wants her who she kind of is like, well, I'm not going to slut shame him. You know, like, I'll like him if he's cool.
She makes right, it's three more basic choices, and she is very super judgy. She is a judgy McJudgersons, even though she is judging other people for judging her as well. So she's
a very judgy. Yes. And but there's so many scenes where it's like she's learning how to walk in high heels and she's teetering around the front lawn trying to figure out like, why do people wear these? But then she like wears them. You know, or she's like super not comfortable with her body, but then she goes to a party in a string bikini.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is all very basic, but it's a good read. I'm enjoying reading it. Whereas your friend was probably like, nothing happens in this book. I'm not reading something where nothing happens.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And I actually like the normalcy in the book and the author, like the character was, I mean, she was normal. She's a normal teenager. She wasn't like, I'm perfect and I'm this and I'm that, or I'm very studious or what. She's just like normal at stuff.
Yeah.
She wasn't outstanding in almost anything. She was just a person who was doing stuff.
Right. And she writes cheesy song lyrics. It's not like the author was like, I'm going to make these song lyrics great. The author was like, well, this character is a little basic and the character thinks that she's unique. So I'm going to have her write really weird hipster song lyrics. And that's going to be who she is. And the reader is not supposed to like them, but it's supposed to be authentic to the character. One of the hardest challenges as a writer is when you create a character that writes, because now you've promised the reader that everything your character writes is going to be brilliant.
Right. Yes. I actually have a specific Goodreads shelf about books where I file these because there's quite a few of them and it's very funny. Like, so if you have a character who's supposed to be smart, like you have to be smart enough to make your character do smart things. And if your character's a writer or a musician, unless you're just like, and she sang in the room, you know, whatever, like you're vague about exactly what happened.
Yes, after she's sang, the whole room was mesmerized by her, but you don't actually show what she's singing or what she's painting or what she's writing, right? Like, I think that the book that you lent me, that I still talk about, you know, the Bar Harbor Retirement Home for Writers and Their Muses, has all these old people living in a retirement, like an old age home on the beach, and they're sitting together in a journal writing a book as a group, like these former famous authors who are now just kind of like, well, let's have one last book. The book they're writing is really good. Like, I was really into the B plot that's in that
book. Yes. It's funny because there was a book that I read recently called The Bromance Book Club.
Yeah, you told me about it last time. Can I have it already? Come on.
So the romance novel that they read in the book is like a legit, I would read that romance novel. Like, that just seems.
Oh, it wasn't made up? It's not.
I don't, I think she made it up, but I think she made up a romance novel that I would read.
See, that's quality. But it has to even have a different voice than the rest of the book. So you've got a book within a book.
It does, because you have to know when you flip to that chapter, and besides just a different font, that it's a different author has written this book.
Well, like, I know my main character in the book I'm writing right now, which is a middle grade, is the editor of her school paper, and she's writing all these articles all the time. Mm-hmm. And I really want to put some of these little short news updates, these news items that she puts in the school paper. I really want to write them. So I have to think in my head, okay, Anne with an E. Did you see Anne with an E?
No, I did not.
Oh, it's great. It's the new update of Anne of Green Gables. It's on Netflix. I'm sad that it's so short. Like, it's only
the Twitters is in love with it, so it can't be that bad.
Who's in love with it?
The Twitters.
Oh, the Twitters is in love with it. You should be in love with it. You would die over the show because she's annoying, but you love her. And she loves to write. And every time she writes, they've given her a specific writing voice. Like, her writing is very incendiary and shameless and fire starting. And it's, you know, when she speaks, she does that by accident. She does that because she was raised an orphan and doesn't understand the difference. She doesn't understand nuance, social nuance, right? She only understands honesty. So when she talks, people, she's like, what did I do? Right? I didn't mean to start a fire. I'm just talking. But when she writes, she's like, truth above all. Like, it's deliberate. And so the writer really had of that show really had to make a decision between Anne's speaking voice and Anne's writing voice. So when you're writing, you have to come up with like a list. Like, when my character speaks, she speaks like this. Her internal monologue is different than her external monologue in this way, right? Like, my character's internal monologue is very, you know, self-conscious and unsure and overcompensating, and her external monologue is like playing with words, lots and lots and lots of big word combos to try to kind of show off I'm a writer, right? Because she's 13 years old and considers herself a journalist. She has to come up with big sentences and interesting combos of letters, and her friends are like, you're very over dramatic, and she's like, no, I'm a lot of words, right? Like, that's obnoxious, but you don't want your character to be all good all the time. A little obnoxious is helpful. So then now I have to come up with a third voice for her, her writing voice. What is she going to sound like when she actually writes?
I think it also depends, is she writing as herself or as a pseudonym? Like,
So she's writing as herself, but she's writing as herself as she imagines an investigative reporter might write.
Yeah, okay. Right.
So like it's really more like, it has to be the way a 13-year-old thinks journalism is, not how it actually is.
So my 13-year-old learns everything from TikTok, so you might need to start watching TikTok to see how people share news.
Well, I get live performances from my children every day.
It's not just dancing, okay? She's learning recipes and all kinds of stuff too. So
yes, my older son says he loves history TikTok. Yeah, history TikTok is a thing. My middle son likes dance TikTok and you know, TikTok all the way. Listen, you gotta, that's the other challenge, is including social media in your writing.
Yeah, I have some texting in my contemporary. Mm-hmm. Which now that I've seen how our friend Rachel and Solomon did it, I was like, okay, good, it's fine. Cause like, I wasn't sure, am I allowed to have texting in here? Because that's like, that is the medium for connecting with people. And especially in mine, where there's a bit of mistaken identity and like online dating is a big part of this. Like that's part of it, is that, you know, my main character is searching for a mate and she's going through like the normal channels that a firm woman would do. And so there's definitely online messaging, right? So
this is gonna be good.
And like, your online messaging is like, it's very different when I'm texting than when I am talking to somebody. Than if I'm writing an email, like each one of those is a completely different voice. In fact, I find sometimes that I go back through and I'm like, there's a work me. And there's a joke about this. Like, now that everyone's in quarantine, we're hearing everyone else's work voices.
Yeah.
So occasionally I'll text my friend. I'll be like, hey, I need to know if da da da. I'm like, oh, that's not how people, like, that's how we do it at work, because we're like, all right, I'm not wasting any of your time, just tell me what you want, no pleasantries, just get to the point. Because if somebody at work messages me hi and I'm like, what do you want, don't say hi and then wait for me to reply and just say hi, tell me what you want all in one sentence. Let's go, move it.
When I was querying my book and interacting with literary agents and other writers a lot more via email, mm-hmm. every email can, once we got past the formal, this is my book, would you like to read it? Every email contained some sort of self-deprecating sarcasm related to being a writer and publishing.
Okay.
And I started doing it just because it's a bad habit that's really easy to catch on to. Things like, would have emailed you yesterday, but forgot it was a Tuesday. Oh, silly me. Quarantine life, am I right?
I have done that to, like, the times when I have made mistakes, I'm like, you know, this quarantine life.
Oh. Yeah, everyone's, and that, so now we're upping our game because we're just blaming the fact that it's lockdown, but it really is, there's a sarcasm, there's self-deprecating level, there's, you know, there's a little bit of humor in there, there's, I'm a writer too, so I get it, kind of a voice, but what's funny is that when you're in kid lit, like you're writing young adult or middle grade, the thing that you notice the difference in the emails is exclamation.
Oh, okay.
So, is it something in your industry too?
I am an extrovert who works in tech. So occasionally I'm like, there are way too many exclamation points for this engineer. Like, I just definitely have, like, I'm not sounding professional enough. I need to, like, go back through and delete half of them quickly.
Less, yes, because when you put exclamation points in, your email sounds like this. Hi, I can't wait to see the results of your project. It's going to be so great. Yeah, but the exclamation point makes it sound like you're really eager.
Thanks for replying. I really appreciate it. Oh my God.
When really what you meant to do was be passive aggressive.
No, not even that. Like, definitely if I'm passive aggressive, it's all periods. So you can tell how angry I am by how few exclamation points there are.
And see, when you're writing, you have to think about that. Oh God, now I really want to include an email in my book that involves exclamation points where the person's like, huh. By the way, this is another one that that TV show I just told you about, Never Have I Ever, that I highly recommend it. It is a brilliant, especially for writers, by the way. I think writers need to watch the show, this first season. You can watch it in a day, I promise. It's really quick, half hour episodes, and there's not that many. And also you could just stop everything else that you're doing and tell your kids to eat all the leftovers because I made them for a reason. Okay. So this show, every episode involves social media in some way, in a way that makes sense and drives the plot forward. You know, the big thing is, oh, if this movie or this book had taken place when there was a phone, then the story would be totally different. I'm like, well, then it wasn't a very well-written story.
Yes.
Yes.
Social media is to drive it. Except that there is the trope about not communicating, and you're like, could you just, hey, Juliet, are you dead? No.
Fine. Right. Well, so there's an episode in Never Have I Ever where she promises her friends she'll be somewhere, and she texts them, be there in 10, but she forgets that she has her geolocation setting on with her friend. So her friend's like, why is she late? Where is she? And then her friend's like, she's at that boy's house. I can see it on her geolocation. So it's genius. Or, you know, she and her friends make a really great TikTok, and no one likes it. And then when the boy she likes it, it's like, one like, and it's from the guy I like, you know? So they use social media to, or, you know, she doesn't go to the party and instead she sits at home and watches everyone's Insta stories from the party.
Yes. Love it.
Whereas when we didn't go to a party in high school, we didn't have to hear about it till the next day.
Or until 20 years later, because right now they're gearing up for my 20-year high school reunion. And so people are posting in the group, like, memorabilia and photos, and I'm like, I was not invited to that party. I don't even get that inside joke. I have no idea what you're referencing. I was not drinking in the desert near a bonfire ever. That was,
oh my
not
god, you're Romy and Michelle.
Yeah, so yeah, except much nerdier and, you know, not showing as much cleavage.
Well, hold on, they were nerdy in high school. As adults,
yeah, I'm going back to my reunion just as nerdy, slightly nerdier because I work in tech.
You know what? People will appreciate that. People don't. Here's what you don't want to hear. What you don't want to hear is this line. You got so pretty. What happened? Because then you go, what was I in high school?
Yeah, well.
What do you mean what happened? Like, you want someone to say to you and mean it, especially if you like yourself. You're exactly the same. Wow. Yeah. That's great. Although no one should be exactly the same as they were when they were 17. That's probably a bad idea.
No, I've definitely grown in some ways, physically and emotionally, since I was 17. I can guarantee that. But it's funny because there's a friend who I do keep in touch with who posted, so there's this whole thing about people posting their senior photos and their prom photos because it's supposed to help this year's class, but I think it just really makes them feel worse. But one guy posted it and I was like, I don't remember you looking like that. I remember because I know what he looks like now. I kind of remember him now. And when I think back on in high school when we used to hang out, I just put that face on him. And so he posted the picture of him in, as a senior. I was like, I do not remember you looking like this.
You know, I look around at these girls that used to be my students, and I remember them when they were in high school, and I see them now, and I think they look the same. Because teenage girls, a lot of the time, are done growing. Mm-hmm. Right? A lot of the time, this is their hair. These are their boobs. This is their body. This is their face. They may lose some of the baby fat later, but this is them. Right? And maybe they'll get the baby fat back when they have a baby, right? Like eventually they'll look like themselves again. They may eventually age, but that's not the same thing. Right. Boys, their teenage faces are not their adult faces.
Wow. Yes. Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
I look at my teenage son and I go, I know what you look like now, but that doesn't mean at 15, like when you're 25, you're going to be a whole different person. And then 30, even boys, like I look at my husband and I'm like, you do not look the same. Like your face doesn't even look the same as when I married you.
Yes, definitely.
And not an age thing. It's a different face.
Yes. It's weird.
Yeah.
Maybe boys are aliens.
Maybe that would explain
their skins without telling us. And they like, they're a different person now.
That would explain a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm into that. Let's talk about that book. Although I don't think that book could get written today.
You think so? No, well, you know, it's going to be an alien race instead.
Yes, I just don't think gender binary books are selling to publishers right now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can see that.
Right, like a book where it's like all boys are X and all girls are this.
Oh yeah, no, it would be a plot point where you run into someone, you're like, what happened to you? You were a different person. They're like, yes, I went through, cocooning 5 years ago.
That I think is interesting, is this idea that like you can upgrade your face. You can choose a different thing without plastic surgery. You can be like, you know, I have the option to opt in. I mean, it's kind of like when you see a picture of Kylie Jenner, buying her bag of Cheetos and holding her Gatorade and getting into her car. And you're like, huh, I forgot she was an Armenian. She's just a normal pasty girl in a tight t-shirt. And then 2 days later, she's like taking photo pics where she gets photographed out and about shopping and she's looking all snatched. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, magically you're Armenian now, like 2 days later. What's the saying? There's nobody who's ugly, just poor. I'm not saying anything because, you know, I don't want to get into that territory. I think we got off topic, Yoni.
Did we? No, I'm pretty sure we're still on topic.
So the other topic, the other class that I was listening to was about Jewish books and what's next in Jewish literature. And I saw a very interesting book that the cover was revealed today about a Jewish girl who's trying to prevent her Zadie from being moved into a retirement residence because she thinks that's where people go to die. So she remembers her Zadie telling her a story of building a golem to protect them during the Holocaust. So she decides to look up the formula for how to make a golem, and she creates a golem to try to protect her Zadie, but no one told her what happens when the golem turns on its maker. That's the premise of the book. And to me, it's everything, because it's combining all the things we've talked about of, Jewish kid lit. You've got Holocaust, but you've also got magic and modern stuff. I just want you to know my husband, Ari, is here, and he has brought me you can hear that sound?
A martini. The FOMO! The FOMO. Everyone, I'm left on read. I just want you to know, which is definitely going in my book.
Your kid left you on a read and didn't bring you a drink, and my husband brought me something that smells like chocolate.
It's not chocolate.
It smells like soda. No, what is this?
Try it.
Okay, hold on. You're neat. what's L'chaim and me on my martini that my husband just made for me at my desk.
I got left on read.
And you on read. L'chaim, what is this? Brachtana L'chaim, shekol mi'eb is
baral.
Amen. You can have a pistachio macaron. Mmm, coffee. It is a coffee martini. Ari, would you like to tell our listeners how you made this?
Absolutely. I would love to tell your listeners how I made that.
Okay.
I took a little bit of vodka.
Sure.
Okay, more than a little bit of vodka. All right. Ooh, I put in some coffee liqueur. Now, those of you who are really strict on kosher, that means Kahlua. Yes, I still have one kosher bottle left, just like everybody else in the country, but there's many types you can use.
There's other brands.
Yeah. Starbucks kind, the cappuccino stuff. Then I took some Frangelico. A little bit of that, and
that
a little bit of amaretto.
You eating a macaron?
And that's what you got.
So you got amaretto, Frangelico, Kahlua substitute, and vodka, vodka, vodka. I say vodka three times because I'm just going to assume you put three shots in here.
Yes.
Oh, I did not expect a confirmation. Vodka, vodka, vodka was
back accurate. To being in person, and I can share him this windfall.
I know. He'll be our bartender again soon. Mm-hmm. Thank you, husband. Okay, thank you, husband. If someone comes knocking on your door soon, you should welcome the knock.
No, it's probably my children asking for Wi-Fi, and I'm going to say, no, you did not bring me wine. No Wi-Fi.
Okay, well, that's cool. Don't worry about it. But if someone knocks on your door, you should get it. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, fine.
My husband has mischief at hand.
Oh my god, what do you mean?
For all our listeners, my husband just went running out of the room holding a martini shaker.
That's the kind of mischief I like. I can get
right? Husband with a brand new face that he exchanged, you know, he leveled up from the aliens. Mm-hmm. Husband with a brand new face and less hair goes running outside with a martini. Well, he actually has a lot of hair right now because, you know, no one's getting a haircut. It's the Omer. He's running outside with a martini shaker just to make our podcast more authentic.
Excellent.
I think this will make it really fun, Yoni. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, so we were going to do a second topic, make it a nice stretched out episode for the fun of it.
We were talking about the future of Jewish lit.
Exactly. So the future of Jewish lit. And I was talking about Holocaust and magic and trying to put those things because really, our kids have been exposed, not as much as we were, but a lot, to Holocaust literature. But if I was to try to come up with a list of Jewish kids' books that were not related at all to anti-Semitism, I mean...
There's that one where they make lots of latkes.
Well, I mean, but isn't that... Latkes good to eat? Make me up a Hanukkah treat?
Yeah.
Or what about stone soup? The one about not having enough money to purchase the matzah meal, so you can't make the knedelach, so you put stones in the soup. Herschel and the Goblins, right. Isn't that about, Herschel and the Goblins is about...
it's probably also about anti-Semitism. It's really probably saying, like, the Christians are destroying the synagogues and Herschel has to outsmart them. Herschel with Goblins instead.
And isn't there a children's book about something Jewish, or is it a latke that keeps coming across Christmas decorations everywhere and gets upset?
Oh, that one I have not seen.
Yeah, but it's supposedly really funny. People get getting upset about it being the Jewish book. And I'm like, you guys, it's hilarious. It's literally about something Hanukkah oriented coming across nonstop Christmas everywhere he goes. And I can relate to that experience.
I think there's something about like a either a matzah ball or a gefilte fish ball that goes on an adventure.
Yes, that's like the gingerbread one, except it's with gefilte fish.
Yes.
And then there's also Something from Nothing. Something from Nothing is the Jewish folktale that you start off with this warm coat. And by the end of the book, it's a button.
Oh, right? It's a button. Yes. No, that was a good one.
Really, that's a metaphor for me for having nothing in your pantry and still making a big bed.
They're all kind of about people being poor.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Something from Nothing. I have nothing in my pantry and I've made a large vat of soup.
We do that on Shabbos all the time. We're like, oh no, either extra people are coming or something happened. Mm-hmm. Now I have to pull together lunch from nothing.
Yes.
And I think kind of with more food than you can eat.
I think a number of women listening would be definitely relate to that concept that there are oftentimes your husband brings extra guests home or whatever, and they get there and you're like, well, I guess I'm not eating chicken today. Like, and that's fine. I don't mind it. Like, it's 5,000 items at the meal is too much. But yes, we women have definitely got a skill for stretching the food that's in front of us.
Right. So, but those are still kind of depressing topics. There's Mirka, the graphic novel about the girl who goes on adventures and fights a witch and finds a sword and, you know, that kind of thing. So there's that one that doesn't have, I don't remember any Holocaust or anti-Semitic parts. It's actually like some Jew on Jew. Oh, is that, there's a knock on my door. Hold on.
Could my husband be at your door with him? Is this real? Is this really happening? So listeners, I'm going to drink my martini while Yoni gets the door. Delicious. I'm not kidding. My husband's voice is coming through the other side. Hopefully you're social distancing and throw her the martini shaker. Gloves on. Oh, Yoni.
So I have a Chaim. We have to edit out all the dogs barking and the whatnots, but.
Was it my husband with the coffee martini?
It was your husband with the coffee martini.
And is that a paper cup you've got there?
Paper cup. And he stayed far away from me, you know.
OMG. Enjoy. Now we can actually, L'chaim. Yoni, L'chaim.
L'chaim.
Woohoo!
Chocotini or a coffettini.
Okay, so let's wrap up with a quick discussion of something that's been bothering you lately. We are both the members of a wonderful Facebook group of thousands of Jewish women who are religious and who love reading and books and all things fandom oriented. And I would say three times a day, somebody posts a question about what to read, especially now that everyone's home and everyone's just trying to get as many books as possible.
But we were also getting them previously where it's like, my 9-year-old likes to read X, Y, and Z. My 10-year-old likes to read X, Y, and Z. My 11-year-old, and so on and so on. I'm like, God, it doesn't matter how old your kid is.
Right.
What matters is the reading level. And look at the other examples that you put out there.
Also, if people just went to Goodreads and started with the book that their kid had read, Goodreads would recommend to them other books.
Also, librarians. My librarian. So here's the thing with some of those ones where you're like, you send them a book and they'll send you 5 books, but sometimes you've already read those 5 books. So it's good to do this with a person. Go to the library, text your librarian. Some libraries have that text a librarian thing. Mm-hmm. And then that way there's a back and forth. You can say, no, I also read that. And then she can branch out, or he can come up with something that may be a little more off the wall that you may not have gotten.
Well, that's why you and I would never pick up one of those brown paper wrapped books that just says this is a mystery, because you probably might have read it.
Yeah, there's a good chance you've read it.
Yeah. The thing that people are always asking is they're saying things like, I loved Harry Potter, but now I'm a grown up. What do I read? And
where I hated Harry Potter. And you're like, oh, okay, well, gee, that's going to be rough.
Then read
the book. That's
everything else. Right. So I think let's do real fast. Someone says, I loved Harry Potter. I'm an adult. I want an adult version. What do I read? Go, Yoni.
Ooh, so have you read Diane Wynne Jones? Have you read Tamara Pierce?
Deborah Harkness.
What's that?
Harkness, Deborah Harkness. Deborah
Harkness. Have you read, like, we could just keep going on and on. This is, fantasy is not a new genre.
Have you read Victoria Schwab?
Ooh, yes, see?
That's a good one. Victoria Schwab has a lot of books to go around.
Yeah, so, like, there's plenty of books out there.
Part of the struggle is that someone who's just come off of reading a big series that they really loved struggles to believe in their heart that they're really going to find something else they'll love just as much.
And you know what? I'm sorry. Part of the reason I hate those posts, I mean, I always try and be useful and try and post something, but I mean, if you're talking to me in person, you said to me, Yoni, I really liked Harry Potter. What should I read next? I would say, what about Harry Potter did you like? I'm not going to just recommend a bunch of magical little boy series or magical grown-up series. What was it that you liked? What part of the adventure? What part of the characters? Was it the dialogue? Was it this? Because I can probably recommend a book for you that you would never put on the same shelf as Harry Potter.
Right.
But you have some nugget of, oh, you liked that, you liked this trope, or you liked that part of it, or you're really interested in magical worlds. Okay, well, I can find you a book that has magical worlds that's completely unrelated.
Yes. If what you really like about Harry Potter is the world building, that she drew you into a place that you didn't know existed behind a secret door. Well, I could do that without magic.
Yeah, there's plenty of books that are like that. So that's, I'd rather have a conversation sometimes. And, you know, especially when they're like, oh, I like these three or four authors. I'm like, well, that doesn't really help because...
Right. Tell me what it is about, we talked about this earlier with emotional connection. What is it about a specific kind of book that makes you go, I'm emotionally invested, right? And that'll do enemies, it.
For example, like enemies to lovers. It doesn't matter if it's in space, if it's at the bottom of the ocean, if they're like half bear, if they're aliens, right. Like it doesn't matter.
It's the Darcy and Lizzie thing. Darcy and Lizzie are technically enemies to lovers. He comes at the beginning and makes a comment about there being, that she's not pretty and why would he want to dance with her?
Witty repartee, you know, I don't know, just that tension. I love it. So like, again.
Yes. It's the Buffy and Spike thing.
Yes.
Right? I mean, neither one wants to be the first one to admit that maybe they are attracted to the other person. And part of the enemies to lovers appeal is that the sexual draw that you have to that person overcomes your personal opinion about their morality.
Right.
Right. That's what kind of makes it fun, which is kind of where I am in the book you lend me, Heartstrings and Other Breakable Things, is that the blurb on the back seems to imply that she's more likely to end up with the bad boy than with the hot neighbor who has a girlfriend that she used to like when she was 10. You're raising your eyebrows at me as if to tell me I'm right, but the blurb is kind of like when you see a trailer for a movie that just gave away the whole movie and you're like, well, I don't need to see the movie now.
Or it did it.
Or, uh-oh, damn it. Okay, well, now I'm just going to have to keep reading. I am not DNRing this. I'm reading it. But what I'm saying is the enemies to lover thing is done in a very similar way. She appreciates his honesty. He says to her, he goes, you may not like me, but have I ever lied?
Right. And she is uncharitable to him. And along the way, you can see you're like, dude, lay off. Like, he has not done anything to you.
Mm-hmm.
He is not... Like,
she's the one pretending she has a boyfriend. She's the one going to parties and in a string bikini and pretending that any guy there is a guy that she brought with her just to make someone else jealous. She's the one who's interested in someone else's boyfriend. And she thinks he's bad. I love it. I love it. Oh, see?
I also do love when there is a reversal and I was like, I did not see that coming. Or even where I kind of know that it's coming, but it still comes in a surprising or exciting way. I really hate when I'm like, okay, well, you know, the butler did it. Oh, look, the butler did it. Like, I don't want there. I want there to be like, am I right? Am I wrong? You know, a few red herrings, a few reversals. You know, I do love the cozy mystery because they tend to be more about the plot and very less about the bad guy necessarily, or the, you know, the blood and the guts and there was an interesting webinar at Y'all West this Sunday on thrillers and mysteries. What's the difference? Is that a mystery is about what happened in the past and a thriller is about action that's happening in the future.
Oh, I like that. Okay.
Anticipation. So I don't mind a thriller, but I really do love the mystery. It's like, well, we have to figure out what happened. And that digging and that finding and the searching, I find very interesting also.
I find it very accessible that I'm able to attend all these webinars and classes that I normally wouldn't be able to attend because people are just kind of like, well, we're all closed. We may as well put them online.
Yeah. And, you know, even if they were charging for it, which, you know, I would pay admission just like I was going in person. I'm not going to fly to wherever Timbuktu because I have children and I have a job. Right. So I can't fly out for a weekend, but I'll pay a fee and I'll sign on to a webinar. You know, I hope found that
when I was planning my Jewish conference, which I had to postpone because all the book conferences have been rescheduled for when I was planning on doing it. And they've been around a while. And I want to compete. I'm not going to compete with them. Like, this is book con. Like, these are big conferences. Was that the number of people that messaged me to say, you know, I have kids, I can't get away. Is there any way we could webinar this instead? That was something that I really appreciated, that people thought about it. But at the same time, I wasn't willing to do it. I was like, no, there's something magical in being together.
True.
And there is something magical in being together, but the webinars, have been really useful and have been inspiring. Has my word count been 5,000, 7,000 like it is when I go on one of these things? No, but 2,000 is no, you know, small number to sneeze at.
I will say that it's hard, whether you're in person or in a webinar, to make accessibility a priority when you don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. So I was really happy to hear from an author that I follow that there were really good captions on some of the webinars recently. So folks are investing in like real transcriptions and not like those auto ones where they mix up all the homophones and make it kind of like, I don't think that's what they said, you know, mm-hmm. not quite it. So I do appreciate that that's there, because I've done internal conferences in my company, and you know, I tried to engage with accessibility to get, and they're like, well, we can only give you accessibility if you tell me that there's someone attending who needs it. And I was like, they will not attend if I do not have it. And yet you will not give it to me unless I have somebody. So like, help me out here. Like I just,
right. Like with the Highlights Jewish Conference, if they hadn't written on the registration form, click here for kosher food options.
Right.
I would have been like, man, what do I do? Do I want to be the person that sends the email that says, would it be okay? But then when I got there, I was like feeling very apologetic about my food situation. Yeah. And people were like, we don't want you to feel in any way like you clicking the kosher option made you a burden. It just became very much like just saying, because I felt like, I'm so sorry to come into your kitchen. I'm so sorry to come and get my food. And they're like, stop saying sorry. Like, we were happy we put that on there hoping somebody would click the box. Like, oh. Because they put it on there, they expected someone to click the box, and here I am acting like a burden. So you people like say, please put those options out there for people, whatever those accommodations are, so that people don't feel like a burden when they ask for it.
And it is nice to be as specific as possible, because I've actually seen like, tell us if you have dietary needs. And I'm like, well, they definitely don't know what kosher is. They're not even going to bother, you know. Or I just write, I keep kosher. Like, you know, if you are calling it dietary need, and you're clubbing in everyone who's lactose intolerant, you know, gluten sensitive, vegetarian, vegan, halal, kosher. Like if you're just throwing us all in one bucket, then I'm very skeptical that this is going to work out.
Well, I liked the highlights was that the people who work in that dining hall, first of all, it was not like a Jewish cafeteria dining hall. I have never seen a quieter kitchen. Okay. Like the people working in that kitchen were just relaxed, very sweet and quiet. And I was like, what's happening here? No one's shouting at each other. No one's calling.
Shopping real loud.
Yeah. Like on TV, summer camp kitchen, like people are loud. And I'm like, this is very quiet. But if somebody had checked the box saying gluten-free or dairy-free, they would have not just been like, well, that person can have salad. They would have been like, that's cool. We'll make an entire meal around that just so that everyone can enjoy the same thing.
Yes. It's funny because my daughter, not funny, she's lactose, she's allergic to lactose, but she's allergic to lactose. And so her camp actually had lactose-free milk and then made sure at every single meal there was a dairy-free option. So my daughter does eat a certain amount of dairy and just like deals with, and she doesn't, it's not like, oh, she gets a rash or a tummy ache. It's like she's allergic, but just, you know, some things don't affect her. Sometimes it's just like she can't have so much in a day, so she can choose. And there's always an option to have something that's dairy-free or a substitute, or she can say like, I'm saving it all up and then I'll have pizza later, or I'm going to do whatever. And so
I love to figure out how we got off on these tangents.
What? This is not a tangent. This is the main discussion.
Right. This is a discussion. It started off because you're talking about Y'all West and captions.
Because we were talking about, so I was saying you have to be very specific when you do accessibility. So you and I talked about how when you're very specific about a culture or a person or what they're eating or what they're doing, it's actually, it's better than being general. Saying like, oh, you know, my mom would make a stew with rice and beans. Okay, no, I'm sorry. She made habichuelas and they, you know, it had green olives in it and I hated that and I always picked them out, but it doesn't taste the same without it. Like if I really give you more details, it's very different than like,
oh, then you start translating in your head. The more details it has, the more you translate in your head to the way that you are. So I'm going to bring up that show again because I think that writers should be watching this if they want to get an idea for how to be specific about a culture without being, like it's the more specific it is, the more universal it is Never Have I Ever is about an Indian girl and her family. Wait, is one of your kids in there bringing you wine?
So finally, the child who left me on read brought me wine.
The child who left me on read brought you an entire bottle of Sarah B. Did they bring a cup?
I brought you a mug because I didn't know what kind of cup you wanted.
Coffee mug!
You know what? I'm going to drink wine out of a coffee mug, and that's okay.
Hey, listen, you were just drinking a martini out of a paper cup.
It's true. Now I'm double fisting. I have a coffee martini in a paper cup and white wine.
An extra dish?
This is a very strong martini. My husband is a good bartender.
So good. I'm definitely like, I need to get this. His
face and put it on a new one. He's still a good bartender. I'm fine with having an alien. It's cool. He's also very confused.
You do you. And so if you doing you is, you know, molting and turning into a different person so that you can make, you know, coffettinis, then that's fine.
Listen, I'll make that sacrifice. I will. I will make that sacrifice. This is a very strong coffee martini. There was 3 shots of vodka in here.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm 4'10". 2 shots is 4.
There is a small, like, Dr. Pepper kind of taste that I'm getting.
Yes, the smell. It doesn't taste like Dr. Pepper, but as you smell it, you're tasting the smell.
Yeah. That's off topic.
Yes. Is it? It's still called the Kiddish Book Club.
That's fair. That is fair.
We don't even have any. We're not paying any attention to the time.
When was the last time we had Kiddish? Every week. But I'm saying, when was the last time I brought a bag of books to Shul and exchanged them at Kiddish?
That's making me sad. Like, I have my Kiddish Book Club tote, which you can get on our website at my website, jessicarussakaufman.com/Kiddish Book Club. I'm slurring now. You can get our tote, and tote is amazing, and it's going to be summer soon.
It's amazing.
Totes, amazing. You know, I said totes my goats, and my daughter told me that they don't say that anymore. It's just totes. And I asked her what happened to the goats, and she got upset. She's like, it's totes. I said, yes. But if it's just totes, what happened to the goats?
What happened to the goats?
It's uncool to the goats. They're very important.
You know, Gen Z, what'd you do to our goats? Gen X, we had goats. Gen Z, no goats. What'd you do?
By the way, I feel like that defines our culture. Gen X, we had goats. Oh, so Never Have I Ever, by the way, is totally like the last 2 episodes are my so-called life update.
Okay, so I tried to watch my so-called life as an adult because I did not watch it when it first aired for some reason. I don't know what I was watching instead, but I didn't watch it. And I just wanted to slap all the teenagers.
I didn't watch it because you were just like 2 years off. Like you were, you know, because you're 37?
Yeah.
Right. So I was in 8th grade and you were in 6th grade. I felt like it was a little young to relate to high school kids.
Although I did watch at some point Dawson's Creek and be like, wow. And then I found out they were freshmen in high school and I'm like, nope, never mind.
Yeah. Pacey's teachers raped him, right? Like, you know, you call it sleeping with your teacher, but why don't we call it rape? Because he's a boy?
Yeah, no. Mm-mm.
Not very okay. Problematic. Sorry, spoiler alert. People haven't watched Dawson's Creek yet.
Hey. You know what? I haven't reached the bottom of that barrel yet, but we could start scraping next week or next month. I don't know.
Well, okay. So if anyone listens, this is my so-called life podcast where someone who's a huge fan of the show when they were my age, right? If it's when they were in high school, watches it with a friend who hasn't seen it. And he's in shock. He's like, how could you like these characters? They're awful. The only good one is this guy, Brian, who everyone in the show thinks is a nerd. And Brian's amazing. She should end up with Brian. And I love listening to that because Never Have I Ever, Mindy Kaling is like, she's our age. And she's like, well, if it was me, I'd have her end up with Brian Krakow. You know, like let the girl who's nerdy be with a nerdy guy.
You know, the geek will inherit the earth. I'm just saying.
The geeks will inherit the earth. I like that because it sounds like meek, which I know is what you're going for, but I explained it.
You did.
If I mentioned this is a good martini and now you're mixing this with wine.
We should put a disclaimer at the front that you need to start drinking vodka at some point so that by the end you've caught up with us.
You need to, we're almost at like 1:20. You need to catch up with me and your knee because at this point we're just basically, we've lost it.
I, you know, at the beginning, I was restraining from dishing on popular books, but if I keep going, I might start slamming some.
Slam a drink, slam a book.
Just saying.
You know, I don't really have any, I slammed a book last week. I slammed a book when I slammed the Dave Eggers book, and I said that it was obnoxious.
Trying too hard.
art, that it was trying too hard, and that it was trying to be funny or artistic or some grown-up version of Holden Caulfield. And I'm sorry, but no one liked Holden Caulfield. That was the point.
You missed the point on that one.
Right. If you think Holden Caulfield was supposed to be an ideal, then you might be, what's the word, incel?
Oh, so someone yelled at me for saying incel, but you know what? There's people out there that's who they are. Hmm. Men writing women on Twitter, by the way, like that's the other DNR where I'm just like, I'm sorry, no.
If the point is that the main character is awful, like a lot of Michael Chabon's main characters are really chauvinistic and misogynistic, and they see women for their boobs, right? The characters, not the narrators.
Right. The narrator can't boobily booble down the stairs.
Nobody can walk boobily and keep a purse in their, you know, chotch. But that's right. Yes, that's not a thing. Okay. That's the pinned tweet to men writing women. But when the characters are doing it, it's a character development thing. Right. And if you're going to redeem that character, he better learn to, like, you know, remember something about the woman other than.
Also, it would make a difference if you felt like the narrator was on your side.
Yes.
Like, you know, there's a difference.
In a comedic way, like he's making fun of the main character for only seeing women the way he sees them.
You know, I think
right, like even Jane Austen, you could tell was judgmental of Darcy.
Yeah, of course.
Yes. She thought that he was, you know, ridiculous, and she used Elizabeth to call him out.
Right. And then, you know, that's I think why I tend not to like unreliable narrator. If the book has an unreliable narrator, I tend not to like that, because I look at the narrator as being on my side, mm-hmm. and helping me see things for how they are when the characters are trying to deceive or this and that. If the narrator's in on the deception, then I feel like, I don't know who to trust. I don't know what to think. I don't like this.
I think that's a man thing. Men who are like, my book is so interesting because it's all taking place in someone's head. And then when they wake up at the end, it's a weird dream, but really, and I'm like, nope, we're done. We're done. If the book didn't really happen, why do I want to read it?
Right. I like that.
I'm not reading a book so I could find out she was in a coma the whole time. That's not interesting.
Well, Coma Girl, which is one of my favorite novella series, you know she's in a coma to begin with.
It's not the same thing. It's kind of like finding out someone was, you know, dead. That only works if there's a plot centered around not knowing, right? If it's just a big fat surprise, none of this is real. It was all imagined. That's not, why am I invested in why she imagined it? If you didn't tell me.
The plot part is lazy. Stop it.
Yeah. So it's lazy. It's lazy. And I think that if the reason I'm reading is so that I can get invested in a story, and then you tell me the story never happened.
Can I ask you, this is where I've been a reader, and is it Deus Ex Machina? Is that how you pronounce it?
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, darn it. So yeah. That's where, like, the, you know, God from the, you know, disappears and, like, resolves everything, you know, like, Okay, I don't know how to end this. So a lottery ticket's going to flutter down right in front of the character. They're going to lift out of poverty and then roll off in a limousine. Yes.
I think it's Ex Machina, but yeah, that ending to me is like Mel Brooks, when he didn't know how to end a movie, was just like, let's not bother.
Right.
We're not going to resolve the plot. We're just going to make it weird. And that's
it. Off stage being chased by a bear. Like, you can do it in a way that's like.
Yes. Exit pursued by bear is the way to do it. Exit pursued by bear is a Shakespeare reference. It basically is the silliest way in which Shakespeare ever got rid of a character. Is a bear came on stage, a fake bear, obviously a person in a bear costume, and chased the character off in order to move on to the next scene. And it was basically, I imagine Shakespeare standing there, like in that movie Shakespeare in Love, and he's standing there in the theater in the round in London. And they're sitting there going, okay, but how do we get him off the stage? How do we get him off the stage? And Shakespeare's like high on shrooms and he's running out of money. Yeah. And he's like, just have him chased off by a bear. I'll write it into the script. I don't care. I don't care. The audience will love it. They'll think of it as like a circus freak show. Oh, a bear. He's like a puppy on stage. Everyone loves a puppy. And, you know, they'll chase him off and everyone, all the idiots in the audience will think it's so funny. And he had no idea that he was creating the most brilliant move of all time.
You get one and maybe for a side plot. It cannot be overused and it cannot be conclusion of your main plot.
Thank you. The conclusion of the main plot can't be exit pursued by a bear. It has to be, right? It has to be, it's exit pursued by a bear is a very self-aware way to get rid of someone. The book is saying to you, we don't know how to get rid of this person, so we're just going to get rid of them.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, as a reader, if I don't know where you're going with this, and I can tell that you don't either, then maybe you needed to like redraft this book because we need to go together. Now, it's okay if I know you're pulling me somewhere and I'm not sure where you're taking me. That can be exciting. But as I'm reading it, I'm like, I don't even know what is happening. I, you know, you, and this, it can be done well or not, where you're halfway through the book and you're like, so the main conflict has been resolved. What, pray tell, is the last half of the book? Or there are three pages, or there's like this much of the book left, like 2 centimeters of book left, and we have not resolve the main conflict. How in the heck are they going to pull it all together? Now, sometimes they do it well, and sometimes you're like, no, I knew this was going to happen.
So that's another writing tip, is I had that problem when I was submitting my book for the first time to agents. My third book, the one that I rep for, was my ending, my original ending, was the last chapter was where everything got resolved. Yeah. But all of a sudden, and there was no like, well, what happens after, right? No. And it was kind of like, I had one agent who was on the phone with me, and she's like, well, I don't understand. Like, I'm reading your manuscript, and I started noticing that there was only 2 pages left. And I said to myself, I don't understand. It hasn't resolved yet. And then it resolved on the last page. And I went, yeah, I'll fix that. I'll add it after. Sorry about that. So when my agent, I actually said to her, I'm like, listen, we're going to make this a series. So I don't really have to do it the same way, but I'll still move that big point to an earlier place.
Which is different than a book ending and you wanting more, because that's not the same thing.
Right.
You know? Like, I just finished a rom-com that ends, but like, so the main character has like this life turmoil and it's not resolved by the end of the book, but she ends up with her love. And so that resolves, but like they haven't resolved like the external conflict. And so I'm like, but what about the things?
See, but that's not me. The story. If you're writing a book, for example, about somebody who's been enslaved or in some way, in some country somewhere. And you just, as a reader, you've been invested in her freedom.
Yes.
And you're also invested in her ending up with the man she loves. And at the end of the book, she's only with the man she loves. You're like, but there's no sequel. She's still,
but you don't need to solve slavery for everyone in the book. Like, that doesn't have to be some giant.
Just her. Just get resolve what I've been wanting this whole time, right? So I think you have to ask yourself when you're writing a book, what is it my reader is going to hope gets resolved? Because if I don't resolve it, they'll be mad at me, throw the book across the bed, and say, I'm never doing that again.
Yeah, I read another book series, and mind you, I read like 8 books in the series. So I'm complaining, but at the same time, I read all 8. Yeah. Where, for God's sake, every book ended like it was a chapter, and then I had to read the next one, and I was so annoyed. I'm like, these are not separate books. Like, I don't know what you were doing, but this is not, like, there was no resolution.
I literally have my book end with her stepping into another place.
Yeah, but like, so what happens in those books is there's a big arc that goes across many books.
Yes.
And then there's a small plot point, and I'm making hand gestures you can't see because you're in a podcast.
Yes.
But there's a smaller arc that's a smaller conflict that is resolved within the pages of the book. So you have to do that. You cannot present me with, okay, now I've given you all the characters and the big thing, and then I guess you'll figure out what happens next time. I'm like, no,
right.
I'm sorry.
Right. For my character, the thing that we're caring about most in the book is not what happened to her mom, what happened to the, you know, that's not what we're caring about. What we're caring about most in the book is her protecting her sister, finding out if she's a witch, all that stuff. That stuff you get to see get resolved. But the bigger question, the question that like, we're, it's behind the scenes, it's not the main thing we want to resolve, it's the larger arc. So that's where, so yes, I love that you pointed that. It's kind of like in Harry Potter. The big arc of Harry Potter is the ultimate, Voldemort is going to come back and he's going to be on the loose. He shall not be named. But the smaller arc is the, you know, the Philosopher's Stone or Sirius Black.
Each one is a small mystery to unlock.
Right. I say Philosopher's Stone because I read the British copy because I'm super interesting.
We can't talk about Harry Potter when we've been drinking because I almost said that Voldemort was a bad foil and a terrible bad guy. And you know what people would do if I said something like that?
Well, hold on. We know. It's kind of like people who think that Snape is awesome. And I'm like, he never got over a girl he had a crush on when he was 11. And then he abused
the child because they reminded him of his love that he had unrequited.
You have her eyes. And I'm like, you know what? That's weird and creepy, old dude. That's not okay. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah, so we could be honest about it and still love the overall series.
Correct. The overall series, but like...
It's like, listen, I understand that Katniss ended up with PETA. Nope. But because it's the grown-up future that when things are over and when things have settled down and she's like, I have limited options and I need to get married and have kids and this guy's here and we've been through stuff together, whatever. They didn't fall in love. They were just together. And that's how things work in that world. It's not a world where people fall in love and have romance. Okay. It's just not. So that made sense to me. It's like the author said to herself, what's the logical future for this person? Not the future that makes readers happy.
Right. No, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being angry because it's a feeling. And sometimes I can be like, that's not fair. Or you know, I was chatting back and forth with some folks about a book where I'm promised that the end of the book will make me scream and throw the book and then angrily pre-order the second book. So.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Because you know what? There's two kinds of yelling. There is enjoyable yelling and there is not enjoyable yelling. And the difference can be very small, right? Like, don't go in the room! Yes. I told you not to go in the room yet, dumb, you know. Like, what did you
think? Enjoyable yelling is the difference between seeing Scream and seeing a Freddy movie. When you see Scream, you're like, oh my God, that scared me. Oh, that was amazing, right? Like, you appreciate the writing. You appreciate the scare. And you go, man, I gotta respect that. That was good. That was good. Yes, you got me. But then there's Freddy where I'm like, nope, can't, I don't want this. Nope, stop it. Like when I'm watching something like Terminator to me, I'm like, nope.
Mm-mm. Really?
Yeah, I mean, there's no, this is an unstoppable bad guy with just an unlimited series coming at you.
So it's interesting because that is the kind of thriller I like, where there's like some pressure that's keeping moving forward. And that's the tension. That's the like the feeling of like that burn underneath. That's the kind of thriller I like. I don't like the kind of thriller where you're like, and then the decapitated body spurted glue everywhere and then infected everyone. Like,
I'm like, well, the last episode of Outlander that was on Sunday was like that. It had, you know, Bonnet, his existence and his potential of harm hanging over the whole episode like Terminator, right? Like this was an unstoppable person that was so over dominating of how we felt. Like you started watching and your level went from 0 to 1,000 of stress in the first 60 seconds and kept you there until the last 60 seconds and you got satisfaction.
So that could be good. That's a good feeling, right?
Yes. It's only a good feeling in the last 60 seconds. I kept pausing and tweeting things like, this is hard. I can't watch this, but I'm still going to, right? Like I had to let out little air pressure of my own stress as I went along.
For sure. But then, you know, contrast with those books where we're like, nothing actually happened.
Yes, exactly. The book that I said, I'm only going to give 3 stars to because I didn't feel any stress or any stakes. Yeah. And, you know, listen, not every book, the stakes involve mystery, thriller, stakes. Not every book involves catching a bad guy. Sometimes it involves a person discovering who they are, right? Yeah. Finding their love, you know, defining their true self, making a decision between, the prince or the pauper or whatever it is. Yeah. But we should be just as invested as if a killer is running around.
Yeah, it's funny because I have a good friend, you know, and again, as the book Yenta, I try and find books for people and match them up. And so she loves books with good character development and plot, but doesn't want anything scary and doesn't want the high stakes to be, you know, violence or that kind of thing. And that often, you know, we talked about cheap plot points. Like sometimes people use violence as a character driving point to get character development or to move from scene to scene or to, you know, there's a car accident or this. She doesn't like scary stories. So the stakes have to be, you know, I'm going to lose this person from my life, or I'm going to, you know, miss out on this experience, or I'm not going to get, you know, what's coming to me for good or for bad, because if I do this or do that. So those stakes where it's like, you know, and it can feel real and it can feel like kind of panicky, like, oh my gosh, like I just blew a big presentation at work. Like, how am I going to recover? And, you know, because of this, all this whole chain reaction of things is going to happen. Like, that could be a driving point in your story that doesn't involve, you know, abuse,
right?
You know, violence against
the. Let me talk about the autistic girl who hires an escort. I was so stressed out when I worried that she was going to quit her job to try to become a different person. And I was like, don't quit your job. You love your job. Like, I was really stressed out. I was more stressed out about that than the possibility she wouldn't end up with her true pair.
Yeah. I think it was interesting. It was an introspective plot point, right? Yeah. Like, that all the tension was her sitting there thinking thoughts that we were like, no!
Well, so that's why when I'm writing mine, I'm like, I really have to make my main character love working on the school paper, love being an investigative journalist at 13, love wanting to have this future.
So you can take it away!
Yeah, so, or when she, so it's more like, so when she considers something different, just because it's easier, just because it'll be easier to do, right? Like, ugh, like the girl in that book, she's like, it's easier. I'll just quit my job and I'll be a different person. My life will be easier if I'm a different person. I want my main character to think the same thing. Like, everything will be easier if I'm not this person, if I'm not doing something that I love, even though the thing that I love is hard. It's really, really hard. I still love it. It's become part of like my thing. I want my reader to go, don't quit. Don't make that other choice. Like, I want that to be the stakes, not whether or not someone's going to like, you know, capture her and shoot her.
Yeah, it's interesting. So in Today, Tonight, Tomorrow by Rachel and Solomon, there is something about, and it's the opposite, where the main characters are like, oh, if we keep status quo, like, that's easier. It's comfortable. It's part of my identity. Yeah. And part of the growth is like getting rid of that and saying, no, that wasn't who I was. That's not who this other person is. My identity and our future doesn't have to be written by the past. And it's purely driven on just understanding and seeing a person for who they are. Not, again, there's no out, there is hijinks. Like, let's say the book is full of hijinks and there's the stakes of a senior class race to complete a bunch of puns and puzzles and a scavenger hunt. So there's stakes there, but no one is grossly or maimed or injured or crying from, you know, some kind of horrible trauma. Everything's like, oh, do I want things to stay how they are, or do I want to take a chance on something that could be better?
And see, this is what we're talking about this whole time, this whole podcast, is the quality of the writing honestly usually determines whether or not you're going to like it, not whether or not there's a huge dynamic, stake-driven plot, and that's like stakes as in like, oh, someone's going to shoot somebody. Stakes are about emotional investment. And I think we've taught people a good lesson here today, Yoni.
I think so. And we stayed on topic like the whole time.
Yeah. We did not get drunk a third of the way, two thirds of the way in.
No way.
No.
So out of character for us.
My glass is empty, Yoni.
I noticed that. I'm still nursing mine because I feel like I'm dehydrated and it's going to go real fast if I like overdo it.
We would for a while. Well, you know what? People can't do nothing right now but listen to acapella and us. So woo-hoo! I'm glad you guys, listeners, made it to the end. Yoni is a book yenta, which is why she's able to talk so much about pairing people off with books that they'll like based on what they love about a different book. So if you have any book yenta questions, Yoni, where can they find you?
I'm Yoni DM everywhere.
And I have now taken on the crown. This is me putting a crown on my head of query yenta. If you are a writer and you want someone to take a look at your query letter or take a look at your plot and tell you like, this is someone I know is looking for this, or you need to rework this, or you want someone to help you out, you message me because I'll hook you up. And for funsies, because it gets my brain going. And so you could find me at Hoffman Jess on Twitter and follow me and give me a DM. And you can find us at Kiddish Book Club on Instagram.
Are you saying that you're doing that instead of what you should be doing, which is writing your own book?
Yes.
Excellent.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us today, guys, at Kish Book Club.
Drop us a line.
Bye. Volcano, Moshienu.